And welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name is Zach, and this week I've got my co-host Mark. Mark, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Excellent.
Today, again, we also have Logan with us. Logan, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well.
How are you both?
Yes.
Yeah, both of us, yeah. So today is a very special day for us here at Tabletop Radio Hour. In the last talk show episode, we introduced our friend Logan here. And I can officially announce that today we are accepting Logan into the crew.
Woohoo! So
we will have Logan with us on a regular basis. Logan, thank you for joining us here on this amazing, wonderful journey we have here at Tabletop Radio Hour. We love to have you, and we are excited to do what we do, role play, have fun, and just be total nerds.
Welcome aboard.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me in. I'm very much looking forward to what crazy adventures we will get to soon.
Definitely. And I did just kind of want to step in and say, this is, you know, there's nothing wrong with Steve. You know, there's no drama here. He just, life got in the way, scheduling was rough, and he had to make a tough decision. So it's not, if you see Steve in the street, don't walk up and punch him. He's good. He's cool. He's good. Everything's fine. He has an open door here. Anytime he wants to come back, I think. Absolutely. I speak for all of us here. He's still one of us, and all is good. So, but we're, you know, ecstatic to have Logan with us, and hopefully Steve will pop in sometime, but, the family's just a little bit bigger. So,
oh yeah.
Welcome aboard.
I was real tempted to do the part of the ship, part of the crew. Steve will always be a crew member here at Tabletop Radio.
There's no leaving the family. No, I think we all know from this last year, real life crops up in the worst possible ways.
Yeah, exactly.
But Mark, I half expected you to go on some crazy rant about, you know, he's on some epic space mission. And
hey,
you
know, I didn't. Like,
don't tell. I'm not at liberty. You're not supposed to know the secret things.
That's right. I'm not at liberty to discuss what those real life conflicts are. So
yeah, I know. You know,
there's that.
Well, today we are going to do another talk show episode, but I think to start off, we are going to have one of our favorite segments, Session Zero. Session Zero, we talk about a game we want to play. So, you know, we've got a segment we call Game at a Glance that we do often. And this is just kind of taking a deeper dive into the game system and sit down and kind of have our Session Zero and plan our game session. This one is an exciting one because it's Flash Gordon. I like Flash Gordon. I don't know a whole lot about it. The other two gentlemen sitting across from me definitely have more experience than I do, but still, this is very exciting. Mark, I'll let you kind of take the reins because you know a lot about this system already.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It might help us out.
And one of the things that's exciting about this is actually part of the Savage Worlds game. It's a world for Savage Worlds. So this is a game that I've wanted to try for a long time. Savage Worlds is kind of a system agnostic, or a genre agnostic.
Setting
game.
Agnostic. Yeah.
Setting agnostic. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, thank you. It's a basic set of rules that can be adapted to a wide variety. Now, normally, I'm not a fan of that. I don't really like, you know, one system doesn't.
Well, it's hard to do it right.
It's very hard. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you're trying to fit in all of these ideas for whatever setting you have.
Right.
And it could be any setting in the world, and trying to fit in, you know, fantasy with superheroes, with, you know, sci-fi, with intrigue. Like, there's a lot of different things there. It's hard to cover.
Sure. And even with this, I don't think this system would fit any genre at by any stretch of the imagination. Mm.
Right.
But I do think Flash Gordon, it's a good fit. I think the system has kind of a pulpy kind of feel anyway that Flash Gordon fits perfectly into. So that was, I think that's a big plus.
Yeah, because you kind of tie Flash Gordon in with the things like, sometimes, in with the things like Conan or John Carter of Mars. And
sure.
It's kind of that kind pulp of out action. There pulpy action. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
And the other thing it has a list of different rules that can kind of tweak the system to subtly fit different genres or different themes to give it just a little bit different feel based on what you're playing. Mm-hmm. And then you also have the Flash Gordon book, which comes in and sets even more setting-specific rules. So you really kind of can adjust the flavor of the basic rules. I'm kind of comparing that to the Modiphius 2D20. Mm-hmm. Does I think something similar. It's a basic concept, but each game has a very different twist on its core rules. And I think in that case, they twist the rules even more. And each book is its own core book. They don't have a core 2D20 book. So each book really kind of puts that into its specific genre. But in this case, you have that core Savage Worlds rules that then you have the Flash Gordon book, and you end up having to go back and forth quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's almost like it's modular in the best way I can think to describe
it.
So you have you have the box set, which is the core rule book for Savage Worlds, and then you have all of these different things that you can use with the core rule book, like expansion books, I guess.
Right.
So,
but the game is I think it's a lot of fun. It's based more on the Flash Gordon comic strips than the movie or the original serials, but fortunately they're all pretty true to the theme. Mm-hmm. The thing is, the comics, of course, have a lot more lore and a lot more story. It's to
one bring. Of the longest running comics, isn't it?
I think so. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a lot of material out there. It's ridiculous.
Right. So that makes it a lot of fun to delve into as well. So the way this session zero works is we pretend that we are sitting down and we are going to plan a game. In this case, let's say I'm going to run the game. You two are going to be playing it.
All right.
What you guys have kind of glanced at the rules. You've kind of been through it a bit. Mm-hmm. What is some of your perceptions of this game, and what would you expect from it?
Logan, do you want to take front on that?
Sure. I think from looking at it and from watching serials when I was a very young kid, definitely over the top, you know, super heroic action is kind of the feeling. Not meaning that it's like battle map grid sort of action, but like we are swinging across, you know, the chasm on a power cable to fight off the evil bad guys sort of thing, like very much, you know, over the top, nearly swashbuckly action, but not specifically, you know, that genre.
Right, which
there's definitely
seems,
that feeling
seems
of,
like our bag.
Yeah. But it was definitely that feeling of like sci-fi, but more almost like space opera fantasy, because the science in there is very rocket punk. It's very, you know, things are crazy lasers and, you know, jetpacks and, you know, not like Star Wars sort of feeling where you have like that faster than light travel. It's very much, you know, grittier,
right?
That high end technology. I don't think there's any FTL travel or very limited FTL travel. I think
I think the rules state that, you know, any space, any rocket travel is interplanetary.
Yeah, it is interesting. Okay. They do use rockets a lot, and you think about this was originally from the 30s, I think.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
You know, so the concept of rockets was new and exciting, and but nobody really understood how rockets worked. So you're basically using them as airplanes, which is it's interesting, but it's a lot of fun because it's just that that pulpy retro flavor.
Yeah.
Little do you know that the other planets didn't exist in the 30s. So
yeah, right.
You know, they didn't know going between planets was a thing.
Right. But there's another mechanic that this has. Kind of going to your point about the flavor of the pulpy flavor is, it has a cliffhanger mechanic that at any point, if you're playing it around a table, there's a little icon you're supposed to set out. And the players can go out and just kind of throw down a cliffhanger. And what that means is there's actually a card deck that you can draw from to determine what that cliffhanger is. Like, you know, a big monster shows up, or you're suddenly captured, or, you know, you're put in a death trap. Something, you know, something that you would say, this is the cliffhanger, and just, you know, that's where you'd stop. You know, take a break maybe, but you'd leave it on that tense
commercial break.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
But then you kind of get, and it's very similar to 7C, where you choosing to fail. It's that kind of thing. You choose that, and then you get something bad happens, but you get a point. But what do they call it? You know, there's a kind of point that you get that helps you get out of whatever situation it is.
What, like your bennies?
There's bennies, but this is actually a conviction point. So this is separate from usual bennies that you get.
That's right. For me...
That's neat. Very much feels like a TV show or a comic book or a radio episode that way, you know, because you can kind of be like, that's the stop, and then
hard
commercial
stop.
Break.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, and you think about, you know, comic strips. They would have that every week. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have the... Mm-hmm. Leave it at a cliffhanger, or the cereals were the same way.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that definitely is there to capture that feeling.
So. Absolutely.
How about you, Zach? What kind of things, what is your impressions going into this?
So I have a strange experience with this, just because the most experience I have with this genre in role-playing is your game, Mark, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
We played a short one-shot with our friend Adam Sink in Mark's game, Astroventure.
That's right.
So it's, you know, still very pulpy, old-school, you know, television show or comic strip, you know, whatever. That kind of feeling, it you know, basically same flavor as this. So,
yeah.
You know, when I started reading through the rules, I just kind of got those somewhat nostalgic, I guess, but it's not from that long ago. These feelings from Mark's game. So I'm excited to get into it because we had a really good time, and it's always just a lot of ridiculous fun.
Right.
You don't have to really care about the science aspect of it, because it is, I think it says in the book, even stupid science.
So
it's very simple. It's very kind of, if you want to do it, it's basically you can do it,
right? Well,
and just get in there and have some fun.
It's interesting that one of the skills they is called weird science, and it's basically treated the same way that the Savage Worlds treats magic. So if you're playing magic, you might use an arcana or you know, some sort of magic skill. But in this game, you use weird science, but you use it the exact same way.
Okay. Just kind of reflavoring it for the Flash Gordon.
Instead of quote-unquote magic, you're doing things with quote unquote science. You're doing the same thing.
I would like to cast science.
Yes. I have a fireball gun that I just cobbled together, you know. So that's kind of setting the flavor. So in this game, you players are expected to be part of the Freemen, which are basically the underground that are fighting against Ming the Merciless. So characters belong to this group, and it's made up of a whole variety of basically everybody who's not Ming on the planet. So you have a pretty wide range of character options. So
yeah, you do. It's kind of ridiculous how many options you have for character creation.
That is true. So what are some of your thoughts on the kind of characters that you would like to play?
Ahead, Logan.
Go for it, Zach.
Let's go with Logan. No. You started last time, so let's keep it.
No, so the first thing that I'm looking at when we look at the book here, it's got like the I guess archetypes are kind of like what's your focus as far as your background, and that's a nice story flavor. I love it when any system starts with what is your story, and then we're gonna look at how the system works with that, which is really nice. And there's like 50, 100?
Yeah.
There's 1,000 of them. Yeah. There's a bajillion. It's ridiculous.
and it's nice. Yeah. They don't have any mechanical effect on the thing. They're just a theme for you to use moving forward, which I love. I think that's great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Adds
very,
more to that,
very cool.
That narrative flavor that you get. And if you make this a longer campaign setting, that's character development and stuff like that. So
background system, it's designed to give you that handle to start with, but also like that why, a little bit of your motivations or potential motivation without, getting too far into your character.
True.
Exactly. I like the aspect of kind of going into character creation a little bit more, the aspect of choosing your, the things that are bad. What are the
hindrances. Hindrances.
There we go. Yeah. Hindrances. Yeah. I'm terrible with words, gentlemen.
I understand.
But choosing those hindrances, whether they be major or minor, again, going into more character development, gives you more kind of points to spend to better your character.
Yeah.
So, it's a really, it seems like a pretty cool character creation setup they have going on.
Yeah, I found it interesting kind of looking through it. I don't know that there's anything really innovative here or, everything in here I've seen a dozen times in other games. But
100%.
But it really just seems to all fit together really well.
It does. I'll be the bearer of bad news and say character creation kind of sucks in the sense that you have to hop back and forth between core books.
Right. Yes.
During character creation, which I've, because they've got a list of skills and abilities and stuff like that in the main core rule book. Mm-hmm. And then because there are all these different genres that they just port into Savage Worlds, they have to come up with all of the genre specific or the IP specific or, whatever the situation is. If you want anything from the core rulebook, you've got to go back to the core rulebook in order to find the things you want.
That seems to be always a problem where you have a setting, generic or setting agnostic, genre agnostic roleplay system is expecting that in their design, they expect you've already been playing their base system and now want to expand out into other options. So since you already know how the system works, here's a couple twists.
Right.
But if you're just kind of jumping into it because you want to play Flash Gordon, you haven't played anything Savage Worlds before, you want to play some other setting, then you're feeling like you're kind of having to, go back and forth and kind of do the ping pong just to figure out what fits and what actually works with the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right. That's exactly
because there are so many options, too. There's a lot of options, talking about skills specifically, there are a lot of options to bounce back and forth between. which
that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, but then
it's a little
I want to play all of them.
But then
right?
you go back.
Yeah,
to the,
exactly.
Then you go back to the core book, though, and there are some in there that aren't available in every genre either.
Right.
So, you know, you really have to kind of pick and choose creatively to make sure you're getting what fits what you're working for.
Exactly. So. Couple of red flags, you know, in this game system. But overall, you know, that's just, once you get past character creation, we don't have to do that anymore. You know,
right.
So that's
kind of
out the window now, you know, once we sit down at the table.
Yeah. So story-wise, what kind of things would you like to see or not see? What kind of things would you like to see or avoid in a Flash Gordon adventure?
Nobody say espionage. Nobody say espionage.
On either side, because one way or the other, we're going to make somebody unhappy.
Yeah. Right.
Well, no, I think that's a great point. That, you know, that is something that isn't really this genre. You know,
no.
Flash Gordon, there's a little stealth. He might try and sneak in, but for the most part, he's walking in as Flash Gordon with his blaster in his hand, you know?
Yeah, that's not what this game is about. You'll lose out on the experience if that's how you want to play it.
Right, right.
So, you know, just thinking of the system just in general, something definitely crazy and pulpy. You know, has to kind of fit in there because it just kind of works with the genre.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wands, I definitely want to lean into some of that, you know, rocket ships and, you know, weird laser guns sort of technology for sure.
Of course.
I mean, that's part of the setting, but like, you know, not just make it like we happen to use this gun, but like, it'd be kind of cool if there's like, you know, adventures or focuses around that a little bit.
True.
Mm-hmm.
True.
I think maybe a not want or a tread carefully sort of situation would be because of when this was written originally, not the game system, but the Flash Gordon setting, you know, there is some old themes in there that are not really okay anymore regarding maybe like sexism or race or other things like that.
Very true.
I think very much in the setting it has, you know, slavery exists, and I think that's a great thing to fight against. But leaning too much into that in a bad way can be really off-putting, and I'll just disconnect right away, you know, like... It's got to have a we're conquering it, not we are slaves to it,
right,
sort of thing.
Right.
We're not minimizing the struggles that are going on. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
I completely agree.
Yeah. And that's another interesting thing that this has. This game system is it's planetary romance. You know, part of that pulp thing is that whole kind of romance thing. And there's actually a system where you roll to see who's going to have some sort of romantic entanglement each episode.
Gotcha.
And that can go either way. It's not, you know, just, you know, men ugly women or
setups.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. You know, it's balanced. It's no matter who's playing what. But you know, that's an interesting way to bring in that aspect of the flavor of the genre too.
Yeah. Plot machines as well.
Right.
You know,
right.
That can help. Maybe that romantic interest turns into the villain later in the story, you know, whatever. So
Yeah,
exactly. So it's just, you know, fuel for that fire
or
and
it's
creativity.
Yeah, or it's creating a jealousy that, you know, makes the villain or villainous fight against you even harder or plot against the rival.
Creates more villains.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
All kinds
of
factions.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I think we could talk about this all day, but.
Sure.
Probably.
But yeah, one last thing, Mark.
Yes.
As the GM running this, what are some things that you would throw into there just naturally because of how you write or whatever?
And there's so many different ways you can go with this because it's an alien world. And for those that don't know, the entire adventure takes place on the planet Mongo. You're not bouncing around planets like Star Wars or Star Trek. It's a planet that you're dealing with. But there's such a rich different cultures and different things to encounter, you can go very exploratory in meeting some of these different races. You can.
I definitely want to do that in this too, because I mean, as we were talking earlier, looking at the different like things you can do as a character, some of these make sense. Like, oh, you could be a dwarf, you could be a giant, you could be an earthling, you know, that sort of thing. But some of them, like, what is a Corallian? Why do I want to be one of the blue magic men?
Right.
Like, I don't get what these people are because I don't know the setting.
Sure.
That well.
Right. Sure. I'm the exact same way.
It's definitely a lot of exploration there.
Yes.
Very Indiana Jones.
Yeah. So I'd like to explore some of the different cultures in some way, but it's got to be action driven. It's got to be, you know, there's got to be some shoot 'em up going on.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I think there's a lot of room, and the core system here comes with a Worlds of Flash Gordon, which kind of introduces in depth a lot of these different countries and nations. And it even includes some adventure seeds for stuff in those.
You could definitely get into that political play for sure because of how they set up, you know, the key bad guy in Flash Gordon is Ming the Merciless.
Sure.
And he's, you know, a scary bad guy, of course, you know, classic emperor sort of evil guy.
Yeah.
But there's like this whole contention between his rule and like a resistance and like people who are still free from either side of that. And I think there's a lot of, you know, that political play you could really get into.
Yeah, well, even if you're only familiar with the movie, you know, that's basically the core of the movie is Flash is kind of uniting the Hawkmen and the Prince Voltan and getting all these allies together to fight Ming as a group.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry, man. Some of these names, there's no way I could take this seriously. Love it.
Yes.
Oh,
so
great.
Silly. It's great.
But that's part of the fun.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well, cool. I think with that being said, that'll be it for this segment of Session Zero. Now on to some main topics. Gentlemen, we've got some stuff to talk about today.
Good.
Talking's good. Good.
First topic today is from the wonderful world of Reddit, like usual. we've got a topic here that says, reading the core rulebook before the game. Does anyone do it? Well, I mean, the simple answer is, you kind of got to.
But we're talking about players. Game master, obviously.
Yeah.
But I have played so many games where I come in with the game master. I've been prepping all week. I sit down and say, okay, what do you want to do? And they say, oh, what's this game about? What are we playing?
Yep.
And they just stare at you glass-eyed because they haven't looked at the book. They have no clue what's going on. And, you know, it's a little, as a game master, it can be off-putting. I think we talked before about players who try and know too much, you know, try to know more than the game master. And this is kind of the other side of that coin, is the people who just don't even put
any
effort into it. And,
right.
You know, they expect you to play the game for them, practically.
I think
it's that entertainment mindset that a lot of players come and
like
they're like, here, cool, I'm here. That's all I got to do, right? You're going to entertain me, right?
Right.
Make some funny voices and do the things.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or they've got expectations like things like Critical Role or these, you know, heavily produced things that are very entertaining.
True.
Yeah.
True.
That it seems like, they maybe didn't put enough effort before they got to the table.
Yes.
See here, okay.
Well, they're new and they don't know what takes to do this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very
good. Yeah. And especially if they haven't run a game before, they don't know how much actual preparation it takes for a GM to set up a game session.
Yep.
And at that regularly sometimes.
Well, or are they thinking the game master has already put in all this prep? I don't need to do any.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think it all comes down to what the player's attitude is like. So if you're coming into a game session wanting to, you know, learn the game as you play it and you know, soak in that information, that's a different thing. But if you're coming to it like, I don't really care to learn the system, I just want to play, it's kind of a toxic player at that point.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It can be, yeah.
I think part of the problem, too, you have, though, is having the people be able to role play without knowing their background at all. You know, we just talked about Flash Gordon. And if you're playing a Lion Man, for example, and you've never even looked to have any idea what a Lion Man is, how can you play that?
How can you role play?
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
By Lion. Ha ha.
Yeah. So you start you start playing Wizard of Oz, you know?
Right.
And that's not what it is. I also kind of wonder how much of this has to do or how much of the blame for this falls in the realm of house rules.
That's totally where I was starting to turn on this. Is like, it's not only just players though, because sometimes you'll have, you know, a new version of a system or a similar to another game system. I think an easy crossover here is somebody going from like an older version of Dungeons and Dragons to Pathfinder, you know, the whole like, I've played 3.5, I know how Pathfinder 2 works, and not actually taking the time as a DM to read the differences.
That's true.
And really look at, you know, what is different in this system and just kind of winging it. And then later on, people are like, but that doesn't make sense because this thing here. And then the DM kind of looks dumb because they didn't take the time to prep for themselves.
That's true. That's true. But I'm thinking more along the lines of the game masters who want to change things, so we're actively trying to change things. So, you know, a player, you know, I read the real books. I understand how hit points work. I sit down. The game master says, yeah, I decided to throw out the hit points thing and make up my own thing. Well, you've just told the players that reading the book was useless and a waste of their time.
Right. And then next time, maybe they won't read all the rules because...
Exactly right. Yeah.
GM. Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. And maybe GM's playing 5th edition and porting 15 rules from 3.5 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever system. Yeah, but
That's the both the blessing and curse of Dungeons and Dragons modern. You know, anything with 5th edition is designed, I think the designers said, we made rulings, not rules. And you can definitely be by that book, but there's a lot of flexibility and space for people to make up their own homebrew or twists or variations on that, which is great for creativity and horrible if you're trying to stick with a very solid system that's the same table to table.
Right. You know, kind of tying into our segment we had to top off the show, session zero is kind of a good place for that. So before you actually get together to sit down and role play, you have a session zero.
Yeah.
And in that, it would make you a better GM if you helped the players understand the rules a little bit better, whether they haven't looked at it at all or know it back to front.
Well,
I mean, when you get down to the base of it, a role play game is a communication game. Mm-hmm. Communication is the number one, and you've got to tell people what you're thinking inside. There's a lot that, you know, I see with GMs, and I felt myself where I want to surprise them. I want to have that cool gotcha moment where they didn't see it coming. But then I'll hold too many things inside, and I haven't explained. Yeah, this is the theme we're going with. This is the focus. These are the themes I want to bring in. What are some themes you want to bring in? Like, there's no communication there. And so people don't know why it's important to run the rule book. If they're used to you just winging it and always being that center point and always just, you know, trying to coax them along and teach as you're playing, they're not going to read the rule book beforehand. They're going to just go with what you say. You know, so having that session zero, very vital. I agree.
But then, that's a great point. But do you start then with, do you go into the session zero with a blank slate without knowing anything? And then do you need a session 0.5 because you've had to tell them in session zero to read the book and then have another session and another session, you know?
So, you know, again, going back to communication, you know, before your session zero, go, hey, the first time we get together, we're going to talk about the game, maybe create characters. We're not going to role play. So, you know, if you can read the rules before we meet, that would be great. And if the player doesn't at that point, I think that, you know, either they're too busy to do whatever they need to do for the session, or they don't care enough.
Right. And I think I think we can all agree that players don't have to read the rule books as in depth as the game master.
Correct.
And but that also runs into the possible challenge of did the player read the wrong section? Which you can't, you know, at least they tried something. And you know, you can never predict that. You might get have gotten that. So there's always a case of, you know, maybe they read it but they didn't read the right parts, or, you know, it was confusing and they didn't explain. Of course, you know, those are situations.
This might be changing the topic a little bit, or a topic for another time, but like, as a DM, what do you want them to gain by reading the rule book?
That's a great question.
What's the key point to find? Do you want to have them coming into the session with an idea for a character, or an idea how to play, or like what's the purpose?
I think that's a very valid question. And I think the biggest thing is it allows the players to come in to session zero with questions.
Yeah.
You know, if they can come in and say, I was a little fuzzy about how experience points work. Can we go over that before we get started? Or I'm debating between a couple different races. What are the pros and cons?
Right.
That is so much
more
useful.
I'm really interested in being a spellcaster, but I really don't understand how spell slots work.
Exactly.
You know, whatever. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you can go into your session zero with some of those things rather than, you know, just
no information.
No information, throw everything at you. And then session one comes along and they say, well, okay, now I have it nailed down to a few different races. What do you think? It's like, well, no, we're ready to play now. Why aren't, you know, where were
and
you?
I think something we're skipping over entirely is the fact that between sessions, so like say after session zero, somebody has a question, there are these wonderful things like Discord or text messaging.
True.
where people should communicate with their GM, DM, whatever.
Yeah.
And ask those questions before your first official session or whatever the situation is.
Yeah, I think that's another part of this is the players that once the game is done, the book goes on their shelf and
they tune out.
Tune out until the next session, and then they pick it back up and say, What game are we playing now again?
Who am I?
I've been playing Call of Duty all week, so I don't have no idea what this Savage World thing is.
Now, caveat to the caveat of the caveats that we've had. There are certain settings or game systems that actually do help or are not hindered by somebody not reading the rules.
Agreed.
Like Paranoia.
I was about to say like Paranoia.
Paranoia, Call of Cthulhu is a great one for that because, you know, it's the less you know is better in some ways because it's more fear. Anything World of Darkness almost is really helpful, especially something like Hunter or anytime you're going to do like an awakening transformation-y game where you're starting to become that thing, that mage, that vampire, that werewolf. You don't have to know how it all works because, well, playing it out will explain it. And it's a very flexible system. Mm-hmm. I think in general, anybody is aided by reading the core rulebook for any system.
Yeah.
Period.
At least the basics.
Does have to be before session one.
At least skimming the book. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and like in some things like Seventh Sea, that's a core rulebook that also includes the setting. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
I see that. That's a great example right there. I think 7C is a great example. If you go into wanting to play 7C and you're like, cool, it's a swashbuckly game. I would like to play an elf.
Right. Right.
There's going to be some problems.
Yeah. Yeah. That has a huge, huge lore that, you know, you can't expect anybody to know everything. But if you pick
much.
If you can pick a nation and get the basics of that nation, so that you know where your character is from. That's all you can ask of anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Know things that you that your character should know for the most part.
Right.
If it comes to lore.
And then if you go to a different country, you'll learn that country in game.
Right.
That's... like anybody would if they were visiting that country for the first time.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's completely fine. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this goes back to you know, having that communication and everybody knowing where they need to be by session one, if this is the beginning of your campaign or whatever. See, it is.
I think this is a great place for any sort of new developing roleplay system or any roleplay system really to have an intro game as one of its starting points. There are, of course, like if you look at D&D, they've got like starter campaigns, but those are like 10 and 15 episode long things.
Yeah.
You know, you really need to know the system and kind of go into that with a different thing. Even if you take one of their pre-generated characters, being stuck with that for that long can be frustrating for some people.
Yeah.
One of my favorite systems in the world is the Fantasy Flight Games Star Wars system. And they have an intro game that's designed to be played in one night because the mechanics for that system are not like normal systems. They use dice, but it's symbols. It's not numbers. And that learning curve of knowing how the system works can be a bit of a head spinner. And trying to go in and create a character for a system that you're not understanding, like, why would I choose this or why does that matter, can be very difficult to have that session zero or to even read through the rules and understand what you're doing. Whereas an intro game allows people to kind of jump into the action, mess up where it doesn't matter because I'm not stuck with this character for a campaign. Mm-hmm. And I could just play with it a little bit. And if it's designed right, that intro session should help develop and show mechanics of the system slowly, but increasingly throughout the entire session. Mm-hmm. So people feel like, okay, cool. I don't know the system, but I have an idea.
Yeah.
I have some inspiration, and I've been able to have some action with that.
Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned that because I was thinking of the West End Star Wars game, which actually has in the core rulebook a solo adventure that you can play. It's kind of choose your own, but it goes through a lot of the mechanics, and it's a lot like a video game tutorial. You know, where the game starts with a, very simple thing where you have to go through and learn what all the buttons do. You know, it's the same basic principle.
We need more of those in games, seriously.
Yes, I agree.
Like, those are fun and silly, but they make sense because it's like, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to work through it. It's okay.
It's a good point.
And now I can learn what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we could probably talk about this all day. So
true.
That's
what we're here for.
This next topic is kind of along the same lines as what we've been talking about here, but it's a little more specific on D&D. It's maybe D&D's popularity is its greatest challenge. So Mark and I are on the side of role playing that is farther away from D&D than Logan.
Called out.
not called out. That's not a negative thing. It's just we're on opposite planes of opinions. No, but if you've been listening to Tabletop Radio Hour, you'll know that Mark and I just don't enjoy D&D over other systems that we choose to play. We're not necessarily saying that D&D is bad or terrible.
Well,
non-creative. No.
But, well, I think that's part of the value of having Logan on the team now is bringing some of that knowledge in, or bringing a different viewpoint in. Because I would love to be persuaded differently, but I think I'm interesting to see how this topic goes.
Well, I think part of it, is, this topic here definitely hits it on the head, D&D's popularity being a challenge, because people think role play, and they usually think video game, and they're like, cool, I'm playing Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
And then they get introduced to what tabletop role play is and how open and variotous that can be. And And usually that first encounter is going to be D&D because there's so much content out there for it. And especially in the past 5 years, five and a half years, whatever it's been, Critical Role has flipped the world on its head and changed how well that's received. It used to be back, you know, a decade ago. If you say you do role play, you say it quietly, hope nobody hears you, and you don't get rocks thrown at you.
Right.
Or think that you're some sort of, you know, that you're into some sort of stuff that you shouldn't be talking about in polite society for bedroom habits or whatever. And so D&D has been that main system recently. And to be honest, it was kind of the first system that was widely accepted. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as what tabletop role play could be. So it's got that long history of always being people's first, not everybody's first, but the vast majority of role players. And so you have these people who get into and they want to play and do something that's fun and creative and whatnot. And they start doing D&D and they're like, that's cool, but I want to do it like a sci-fi game or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever else not. And they start doing their own twists to it,
yeah.
Which obviously there's systems and content out there for adjusting, you know, a fifth edition to different settings, but it's very, I think it struggles
well
change itself.
We've talked before, the third edition, I think, was really, really bad about that. There was a run where everything was the D20 system. And
well, because it became open license at that time.
It was open. Yeah, it was open license and people already knew the rules, so they could you know, kind of go, but you know, as we said before, that doesn't necessarily fit every genre.
Right. That's part of how World of Darkness got some of its popularity, mm-hmm. Was right around when third edition was coming out, there-ish. It was like early 90s. We've got World of Darkness stuff coming out, and they're like, haha, forget your regular roleplay idea. We're the bad boys of roleplay. We're going to flip that on its head and do something completely different and wild, and it's going to be totally flexible and... You know,
yeah.
It worked for him at the time.
True. Very true.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I think it comes down to, though, you know, with any sort of role play situation, you know, how is it run? It's going to live or die based on what people at the table are willing to do, and especially who's leading it, your dungeon master, your game master.
Yeah.
If you're looking for one thing, if you're looking to do an espionage game and be able to use some of your rule of cool sort of stuff and like talk your way through things, and you're playing with a guy who is new maybe to role playing and very much likes the tactical side of things and wants to plot out every square and have you, you know, check out every hex
right.
to figure out, you know, how to get through this area, there's going to be a bit of a clash there because your intents are different going into it.
Very true. I think I'm sure I've told this story before, but when I started playing,
I've been here.
Well, that's right. When I first started role playing, the first game I got was the FASA Star Trek, and we found a group and they were interested in playing it. So I sat down and ran it, and you know this was in the '80s, early '80s. So they had that kind of thing. They had that D&D mindset type thing, and I ran a game, and they had that. D&D, you go out and kill the monsters mentality. So we played that,
right.
And they, you know, they did their thing. Well, then the next session came down, and I played out a court-martial where they had to deal with the implications of their actions and, you know, breaking the prime directive, and their mind was just kind of blown. It's like, There are consequences for our actions. This is, you know, and, you know, I think,
preposterous.
Yeah, I think a lot of that came from that D&D mentality at the time. And, you know, that's part of it too, is that the way you play, you know, if we're role playing, mm-hmm. we're an adventure party and we're out to get gold and kill things. Right. And there's so much more possibilities of narrative options out there that I think sometimes, you know, if you get in that D&D tunnel vision, you miss out on.
Yeah. And I think, not speaking for Mark, but speaking for myself, I'm the kind of person, and I believe Mark is, as well that prefers social interactions in role playing. And I think I feel like playing something like D&D 5th, you're lacking on the social side of things because you feel like you just
is that roll. True?
I think there's a
is that true though, or is that just the approach that most people take?
It depends on how you look at it. Okay, I think we talked on touched on this when I was chatting with you guys before about what is the purpose of mechanics? What is the purpose of a system? To me, when I look at a role play system, I want it to not only have things that are interesting to me and grab me, but also that it has mechanics for the type of play that I want to play built into it.
Yeah.
As you can see by watching, you know, Critical Role or some other, you know, shows out there, you can definitely have constant social interaction and high levels of role play and acting involved. But that entire group is actors. Mm-hmm. They are trained actors, well, you know, versed in acting. So, of course, they're going to be able to fall back on that. There's not really anything in D&D's system designed to help with that outside of, hey, these things could happen. And here's a possibility of using a skill in that. Yeah. But it's exceedingly basic. There aren't mechanics in there where that conversation can get twisted by the game or that you know, experience can have changes without doing some legwork as a DM. So I think it really comes down to what are you looking for? You can have a good role play moment in any system, but is the system helping with that?
The other side of that coin is you can also have a system that the mechanics get in the way of the role playing.
Mm-hmm. They can.
So it's possible. But yeah, you're right. There's, you know.
And it comes down to how you want to do it. You know, I like giving, when I'm running a D&D game, I like giving people, you know, those bumps or those advantages based on how they role play.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also a point to having, you know, some sort of skill to deal with intrigue and reading people. Thus, they have the insight skill in there, how you can kind of read somebody's body language. So it's like, cool, you really role play that out. Well, let's roll.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you failed that roll. Doesn't mean that didn't work. It just means that there's something else going on here.
Sure.
But that's, again, built on me having experience as a dungeon master for many years, knowing how to make that more intriguing and to really change, you know, how people interact with that.
Right. And how much do you want to aid or hinder the player who might not be, who might be socially awkward, who wants to play somebody who's a little bit more suave and articulate.
They're exceedingly quiet. They're not somebody who speaks outwardly and they want to get involved in role play, but they're very nervous about it. And they just don't, they're not somebody who speaks up a lot because they like to, their internal processing, you know?
Right.
And so it is part of, you know, your job as a DM to try and help them feel like they can engage with it. Very much so.
Sure.
I agree.
Yeah. And rules that, that facilitate that can help.
Now, this isn't just, this isn't just role play, you know, specific. I would say that popularity of the thing you want to do will affect and be the greatest challenge for it. I'm talking from my side as being also a tabletop strategy game person. I like doing war games. And more often than not, I'm going to play a game that I don't care for because that's what everybody's playing right now. That's what the group is playing.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to play that miniature battle game, not because it's my favorite battle game, but it's because that's what the club is doing.
Right.
You know, so sometimes that happens because that's just what's going on. That's what people want to do. That's what people want to see.
That's a good point.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One last topic I had just kind of close to what we've been talking about here. Why doesn't anybody play a human? this is a fun one.
I have to role play a human every day and they suck.
There's that. But I'll be honest here. I'm the one who threw this question out because I, you know, I'm looking at a Star Trek game, and Star Trek is as an example, and then there's many examples. Star Wars has the same thing. I think even D&D, the
most fantasy settings,
and they will Flash Gordon, they will usually say humans are the most abundant, but you pick just about any party and you're lucky if you have one human in a party.
Yeah.
Usually.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it just kind of struck me as this oddity. And especially, you know, with something like Star Trek, it seems like not only do you have the lack of interest in playing a human, but you have, they try to push it even further that, you know, I want to be a sentient vending machine or something, you know, these, they just try and come up with these more and more outlandish concepts that build on, you know, there was this weird alien in this one episode. I want to play that. It's like, why do you have to go to extremes? If you look at the series, the majority of the characters are human.
Right.
And the majority of people's favorite characters are human.
Right, because the actors playing them were all human.
Well, yeah, of course.
So that's, I think that's why we see it in stuff like that. But
yeah,
when it comes to, you know, in most fantasy settings, any of these fantasy sci-fi, whatever, I think you're just given more incentive to play something not human because of...
Not always.
Not always. But in most cases, you know, elves are better at archery, you know, something's better at magic, you know, whatever.
Usually,
you're given that incentive to play something else.
I would say, I'm going to disagree with you, kind of. I think the other races usually have a specialty, whereas humans tend to be more generic and, you know, kind of good across the board, which makes them...
Yeah, like taking D&D 5th, for example, if my memory serves me right, you know, the bonus for a human is you get a few extra points or a point in every stat or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, D&D is very much like that because it does try and incentivize people to be humans, because it is interesting when you're an elf and you start with certain bonuses in certain areas and you've got, you know, maybe a spell you start with. That's kind of cool, right? It has some flavor to it. Humans, right. You've got two different options where you can start with a bonus in every attribute. Or you can take the alternate human version where you start with two bonuses and a feat. And that could be really, really powerful mechanically. And so D&D tries to incentivize people to do humans on mechanics. But most of the time when people choose to play a human, it's not a role play choice. It's a mechanics choice.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But, you know, and yeah. I think that's interesting because I think with humans, because, you know, we're kind of aware of humans, it seems like there's so much more range of possibilities of what type of human, you know, especially in a world that's set, you know, relatively our world, you have a huge range of diversity that you can have within a human. Whereas if you're playing a Wookiee, you are a Wookiee.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're going to be...
And it depends on your setting too, like, or not your setting, but your what you set up for the game. Mm-hmm. If you decided that you know we're gonna play you know in Star Wars, but we're stuck on Kashyyyk.
Yeah.
So if you're not a Wookiee, it's weird.
True.
Okay. True. Now we're gonna look at what are some different tribes of Wookiees and what are some different nuance that we're gonna get with this group. When you have a system like Star Wars or Star Trek or D&D, where you have 30 bajillion race options. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to play those races. And so, therefore, when you take it from a general view of all of these different options, it takes too much time to get into that nuance, really. And so people end up becoming caricatures because it's easier.
Absolutely.
And you are the Wookiee.
Right. And that's usually what the races are. You know, again, looking at Star Trek, you know, Vulcans are all very logical. And Ferengi are all money-grubbing, you know. Huts are all big, fat gangsters. They tend to have that kind of archetype built into the race in a way that humans don't necessarily.
That's true.
And some of it too, with a player's wanting to not be human, is there's a little bit of that, like, at least for newer players, that whole I can do anything. Cool, let's do it. I'm gonna be whatever crazy thing I want to be, you know, because I can.
Yeah,
and that's fun.
That's true. Here's the other side of the spectrum, taking a game specifically of John Carter of Mars. Why would you not play a human?
I was thinking that,
because, but, you know, in John Carter, the humans, when they're on Mars, they've got super strength and they can jump like 80 buildings. But
again, in that case, they're saying that the Earthlings are extremely rare. So, yeah, that's true. You know, that's the humorous part of that. But yeah, yeah, in that game, it's the red Martians that are the quote unquote norm.
The quote unquote humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So then it comes down to, why would you want to play that? You know, because are you choosing it because you have an interesting story about being an Earthling going there? Or are you choosing it because I'm going to be strong?
Right. Right. Well, I mean, you know,
again, mechanics.
You gotta pick it because you're going to be strong.
You're going to be strong.
With Game Master approval. Yes.
With Game Master approval. Right, exactly. Well, gentlemen, we've talked about a lot today, and I've had a blast, but I think we're going to, we need to wind this episode down. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. Logan, again, it's great to have you on the team with us.
Great to be here.
On a regular basis now. And Mark, thank you for joining me, like you always do, on this wonderful Sunday.
And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on soundcloud.com/tabletopradiohour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at TabletopCast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on facebook.com/tabletopradiohour for regular updates. We also have an email address that is tabletopradiohour@gmail.com. Our website, tabletopradiohour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening, and keep rolling 20s.